interest groups will get together and solve their own problems. As much as they have to compromise, they usually end up with a better deal than if the seven dark angels of the Board of Fisheries have to swoop in and decide it for you.
Sport and commercial fishermen duke it out over Southeast chums, and fire insurance rates could go down for some Haines residents. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That much and more up next. Household fire insurance in Haines and Skagway should remain close to stable for another decade as a result of the latest fire rating statistics just released for the two towns. But some fire insurance customers in Haines could be seeing lower rates soon. Haines Volunteer Fire Department Training Officer Al Badgley explains something called an ISO rating, which is taken every 10 years and helps determine fire insurance rates across the country.
The ISO rating is the fire protection rating of the community. And I mean, basically, the main input or impact it has on people in Haines is how much the insurance is going to cost you if you want to buy fire protection insurance for your house.
Basically, the lower the number, the lower the insurance rates. Haines and Skagway's hydrant area have rated around 5 in the last decade.
You can go anywhere from a 1 to a 10. There is no one in Alaska that is a level 1 community.
Even Anchorage and Juneau with advanced fire protection systems and staffed fire departments aren't level 1. And there are only a couple level 2 communities in the state. And the new number for downtown Haines?
Haines is a level 5, which is pretty much a fairly good number for a mostly volunteer fire department.
Inspections occurred in the past few months, and the final rating was just released to local fire departments by the Insurance Services Office. That's what ISO stands for. Skagway's hydrant area is now at 5, about the same as before. Outside of the hydrant area is a 9. Haines has 3 separate areas with different ratings within the borough. The hydrant area remains at 5, but the area 3 to 5 miles from the fire department improved their rating, which could mean savings for those residents with insurance.
We were a 9, and now we're called an 8B, which is, it's kind of like a B plus or something like that. It's better than a 9, but it's not quite an 8. And that's due to the fact that we have some water issues. You have to be able to pump 250 gallons of water for 2 hours straight.
The calculation of the ISO number depends on things like the emergency response system, the pool of trained responders, and the fire prevention infrastructure for town.
Like our dispatch and what it's called, receiving and handling fire alarms. So if you have no 911 system, you have no way for people to dispatch the fire department, that affects your ISO rating that way. And then you actually have the fire department rating, the amount of equipment you have, the personnel you have, the training you have. And the third division is the water supply. Do you have hydrants? How much water supply do you have in the, you know, water tanks that you have available?
The rating is done every 10 years unless the department requests another inspection because of a big change in emergency response staff or fire suppression equipment. Badgley says it would be very challenging for insurance services to rate Haines with a lower number. But for the department, the number represents a lot of work done in the community over the last decade.
I think one of the key elements is the fact that you have to try to strive for what you feel the capabilities of your town and your department are. And pretty much when we took this one on, I said, we're going to be a 5 or 6. And the difference is could be somewhere between $100 to $300 a year per person, the difference in that rating. So, I mean, you start thinking about that, that can add up significantly. If you have every homeowner that has fire insurance, if you could save $100, that can make a big difference.
Skagway Borough is also continuing to work with the state and the phone company on a phone switch equipment issue that disabled emergency response communications late last year. When the borough began using new phone switch equipment in December, not all dialers that the town uses to communicate with dispatch worked. According to a public notice released by the Skagway Fire Department, currently all of those dialers called silent night fire alarm dialers are working, but the solution is a temporary one. The borough and the Alaska State Fire Marshal's office is looking further into the problem to see if the new phone switch system meets the dialer manufacturer's requirements for a communication system. In other fire news, the Skagway Fire Department is working with Public Works and the Police Department to hold a 24-hour brush burn at the Seven Pastures brush pile. The borough will select a day that has the proper amount of wind and precipitation and announce that date through KHNS on the day of the burn. Sport fishermen and chum trollers have reached a compromise in a salmon allocation battle in northern Southeast. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from the State Board of Fisheries meeting in Ketchikan.
Targeted chum salmon trolling is relatively new in Southeast.
It's only in the last 20 years, but particularly in the last four or five, the trollers have really been able to successfully target hatchery chum.
Eric Jordan represented the Chum Trollers Association at the Ketchikan Board of Fisheries meeting. He said the Icy Strait and North Chatham Strait fisheries were worth about $1 million to trollers last year. They wanted the fishery to grow, so they put a pair of proposals before the fisheries board. One expanded spring harvest areas in Icy and Chatham Straits. The other added a summer troll area in Upper Stevens Passage, which is much closer to Juneau. That didn't go over well with Capital City anglers. Larry Edfeld of Juneau-based Territorial Sportsman says the plans encroached on popular fishing areas.
We wanted to protect King and Coho access, and we were afraid if you put 150 trollers into the north end of the Juneau area that a lot of juvenile kings, feeder kings, and cohos would be caught in addition to a lot of chums.
Rather than butt heads before the board, they decided to work together on a compromise. The commercial group gave up much of what it wanted, while the sportsmen dropped objections to the remaining fishing grounds. Jordan said it was a good deal for chum trollers.
We ended up with less area and less time than we wanted in the new area on the Admiralty Shore, where we figure we'll have an even higher percentage of hatchery fish.
He said the compromise allows trollers to target hatchery chums and hatchery kings, switching from one to the other as caps are reached. Edfeld said the sportsmen are satisfied because they were able to keep trollers out of popular fishing areas near the northern part of Juneau.
They agreed to not only a reduced area, but a four-day-a-week fishery that did not include Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
The measure has a sunset clause, so the expansion will come back before the fisheries board in 3 years. And there's more to the agreement.
The chum trollers have agreed to not try to expand that fishery without gaining the consensus of the Juneau sport fishermen and charter fishermen, as well as the gillnetters.
The compromise is one of a number that developed during or leading up to the fisheries board meeting. Jordan said that's becoming more common. He says it's good for Alaska's fisheries.
I think if the interest groups will get together and solve their own problems, as much as they have to compromise, they usually end up with a better deal than if the seven dark angels of the Board of Fisheries have to swoop in and decide it for you.
He credits the board, particularly Chairman Carl Johnstone, for encouraging negotiations. Johnstone says he puts the proposals with the most impact before the whole board, rather than running them through a committee. He said that seems to quell some of the controversy.
And the wind kind of goes out because everybody has pretty much decided one way or the other what's happened. And then the rest of the proposals are available, and the people seem to be more conciliatory.
Gillnetters, Fish and Game Department staff, and a charter group joined the chum trollers and the sportsmen in drafting this particular compromise. Their measure passed the board on a unanimous vote. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Ketchikan.
At the same meeting in Ketchikan, Alaska's Board of Fisheries decided on Friday to take purse seiners out of the West Beam Canal sacro herring fishery, but the board voted earlier against shutting it down altogether. Managers frequently close the fishery north of Ketchikan due to low returns. Seiners and gillnetters alternate years when the numbers are high enough. The proposal from Petersburg gillnetter Arnold Enge takes seiners out of the mix. The plan was among 26 before the board's Herring and Groundfish Committee. Member Sue Jeffrey of Kodiak said some on that panel saw it as a resource grab.
But I think it was also recognized that the proposer is simply trying to keep the gillnet sacro fishery viable. And this is one way that he thought would be fair.
The proposal passed the full Board of Fisheries on a close 4-3 vote. Fairbanks member Mike Smith was among those with doubts.
I think that kind of tends to lead us down a very slippery slope of trying to massage these management plans based upon some fluctuating abundance numbers.
State biologists project this year's herring biomass at about 8,000 tons. Commercial fishermen could take about 840 tons, with the tenth going to the bait pound fishery. A separate proposal before the board could have removed seiners and gillnetters from the Beam Canal herring fishery. The Ketchikan Guided Sportfish Association wanted the board to almost triple the threshold for opening the area. The charter group's Jeff Wedekind said low thresholds continued to the demise of other southeast herring fisheries. A threshold is the smallest projected population needed to open a fishery.
There was a 5,000-ton threshold for Lynn Canal herring. I believe the last time they fished those was 1982, and they haven't recovered sufficiently to fish yet.
Beam Canal's herring threshold is 6,000 tons. The proposal would have increased it to 15,000 tons. Juneau board member Bill Brown said that could have only one effect.
I believe I understand the intent of the proposer is in fact to shut down the Beam Canal herring fishery.
Officials say they don't know why the herring numbers have been low. Commercial fisheries management biologist Scott Walker says that population may have shifted to a nearby area. For KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.